I think leaders definitely shape and influence culture. And even though we have a rich one here at Walmart that's pretty well established, no doubt a leader or leaders can make that culture more effective or less effective.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Investing City podcast, where the goal is to get better at investing, business, and life. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. It really means a lot. Without further ado, enjoy this episode. Okay, kicking it off, our first ever guest on the podcast is someone very special. Someone who has been named to the Forbes Most Powerful People 4 out of the last 5 years, coming in at number 23 in 2018. This week, I'm very excited to interview Doug McMillon, the current CEO of the Fortune 1 company in the world, Walmart. Doug is honestly one of the most humble, gracious people out there. If you randomly met him, you would just walk away thinking, I like that guy, not, wow, that was the 23rd most powerful person in the world. McMillon began his first job with Walmart as a summer associate in high school, unloading trucks. He got his undergrad degree at Arkansas, then his MBA at Tulsa in 1991. Soon after, he joined the buyer training program. He worked his way up to become president of Sam's Club in 2005 and stayed there until 2009. Then he spent 4 years as president of Walmart International from 2009 to 2013. And finally, in 2014, he became the 5th ever CEO of Walmart, where he has been ever since. Doug's tenure has seen a lot of big decisions, and he's done a lot to change the stigma of Walmart's brand, including raising its minimum pay, fostering innovation, and focusing on a more integrated e-commerce opportunity, including the acquisition of Jet.com, and also a big stake in Flipkart in India. Changing the course of a big battleship like Walmart isn't easy, but if anyone has the ability to do it, it's Doug. I'm overjoyed to present to you Doug McMillon. Okay, thank you so much to Doug McMillon. We're so excited to have you on the podcast. Thank you for being here, Doug.
Excited to be with you, Ryan. Congratulations.
Thank you. So the first thing I want to talk about is this little story I heard that you like to kind of clear your mind in between meetings. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I've got a good friend who a few years ago gave me this tip because we're constantly dealing with a breadth of issues. I'm sure it's that way for most business leaders, but you know, just today I've been spending time with our chief customer officer thinking about our customer value proposition. I've toured a distribution center. I've recorded videos for international markets. I've spent 30 minutes on compensation design. So you're running from one thing to the next. And his tip was, before you walk into the room, imagine that you have a cup in your hand, a coffee cup, for example, and that you just pour it out. Imagine just dumping it so that there's nothing left in the cup. So that when you walk into the room, you basically hit reset and you're able to listen, focus on the content that's right in front of you. Because each conversation, each topic is important and you can't get too distracted by what you just finished. You've got to be focused on what comes next.
That's awesome. I love the visual aspect of that. So I just want to jump to kind of a thought experiment. So let's pretend that it was your first day working at Walmart at kind of the bottom of the pyramid, right? Imagine or tell me about the emotions that are kind of evoked if you saw this headline about kind of your future self, where you are now. Local boy from Bentonville, Arkansas, grows up to be at the top of the pyramid for the Fortune 1 company in the world.
Yeah, definitely would have chuckled about it at the time. And then I guess the second emotion that comes is a bit of the daunting responsibility of it. Because the truth is that kid was in no way prepared for the job that I'm being asked to do today. It's been almost 28 years now of other people investing in me and teaching me things and supporting me, encouraging me and putting me in jobs that enabled me to have a chance of doing this one well.
And just to kind of go off of that, what is your favorite part of the job? I know you said you do a lot of different things, but is there something that you really enjoy?
Yeah, there's a lot that I really enjoy. Monday, I was in Omaha, Nebraska, and went to see our local supercenter there in a Sam's Club. And it just so happened that in that supercenter, we have an academy. Around the country, we've got 200 locations now where we've been able to reduce the inventory in the back room, and we've taken space to construct classrooms and equip them with technology, all kinds of technology, tablets and screens and even VR. And I got to walk in and surprise this group of assistant managers that was in there picking up new skills with an instructor, and to hear their career stories and to see them growing right before your eyes has got to be, you know, an example of the highlight for me. It's seeing how the team and other people are progressing and continuing to innovate and grow a business together.
And to go off of that a little bit, I know, of course, the culture of a company is very important, and that's something that you try to focus on a lot. How do you think about changing a culture, or is a culture very much something that has to change over a long, long period of time? And I guess what I'm trying to say is, does that disincentivize you because you know it's so hard to change something? Or how do you think about that?
That's a very important question. One of the most important questions I think that you and other investors or students of business need to be thinking about, because culture drives so many different things. In our case, we inherited a set of behavioral characteristics from our founder, I guess as every company does. And here it is, 2018, almost 2019. Our founder passed away in 1992. And Sam Walton still comes up in pretty much daily conversation around here and within the business around the world, and what behaviors he exhibited that we want to perpetuate. So the word that comes to mind when it comes to culture for me at this stage of the company is to shape. I think leaders definitely shape and influence culture. And even though we have a rich one here at Walmart that's pretty well established, no doubt a leader or leaders can make that culture more effective or less effective by the way that we behave, most importantly, but also by what we say and what we stress, what we reward. So my leadership team and I are actively engaged and deliberate about which behaviors we want to dial up, almost like a mixing board or a synthesizer of some sort, where you're moving up, in our case right now, a performance environment, raising expectations, dialing up an appreciation for diversity and inclusion, and trying to dial down passive aggressiveness or a lack of clear feedback. And so we talk about four core values in the company, which are timeless, and then behaviors underneath those four core values, including the ones I just mentioned, and try to stress to the entire team, we want to see more of this and less of that.
I like that idea of the synthesizer. You mentioned leadership a couple times in there. How do you personally define leadership?
So I've been joking with folks around here lately that you can't push a rope, and you can pull one more effectively than you can push it. So if a rope were laying on the ground, I would grab the end that I wanted to take a certain direction, and I'd pull it. And I think that's what leadership here looks like. You've got to be out in front in terms of having a vision, knowing what direction the company needs to go in generally, constantly taking on new information and refining as you go, but lead by example. Here, servant leadership is really important. Looking ahead, thinking about how we're going to deploy new technologies to serve customers in new ways is something that I spend a lot of time on. So I end up coming back and telling stories about, like tomorrow I'm going to a VR company that I visited once before, and I'll come back from that visit having taken a small group with me, and I'll tell stories broadly about what we saw, what we experienced, what we think we could do with that, And by telling those stories, setting that example, and then resourcing some change, we'll see progress as it relates to how we use that particular form of technology. So when I think of leadership, I think of a vision, being out in front, modeling behavior. You know, walking down the hallway today, I stopped and picked up a couple of small pieces of trash that had fallen on the floor, not just because it needed to be picked up, but because I want everybody to know that matters to me and that detail matters and expectations are high.
I like that, picking up the trash, the servant leadership. And then I think it's an interesting question of if leadership is something that is so important, do you think it is more a nature versus nurture thing? Or how do you think about somebody being able to improve as a leader?
I definitely think that people do improve as leaders. There's a certain amount that's in our DNA, but the way that we were raised, the way that our parents treated us, the environment we were in at a young age certainly influences things. I know it did for me. And then when I got to Walmart, I was in my 20s. When I first started working for Walmart, I was 17 years old, and I came into the home office in my early 20s, and I was fortunate enough to be here before Sam Walton passed away and to watch him lead, to be around other terrific leaders who I could model certain behaviors after. And so I'm a product of all of those people over the years and trying to take the best things I saw from them and incorporate them into my own leadership style. So there's definitely always room to improve as a leader. And I think for me personally, and it's probably this way for everybody, you learn more by what you see other people do than you do by what they say.
I think that's a huge part, right? Of just continually learning and soaking up everything. Seeing as that the year is drawing to a close and we're talking about learning, what were kind of the biggest things that you learned in 2018?
Learned a lot about network effects. So it was just yesterday we were with Bharat Anand, who wrote a book called The Content Trap. And the book makes the point that, take entertainment, for example, you can have great content like the original Apple computer that Steve Jobs created and still fail because you don't have the right ecosystem or platform like Microsoft did with Microsoft Office. So even though the form factor was better and other aspects from a user experience were better in its original form, Apple didn't have success because Microsoft had a better platform and system. And so here we're trying to take a company that has been successful to some great extent because of scale. We leverage our fixed costs. We run on narrow margins. And because we have a lot of customers and we sell a lot, we're able to sell at lower prices. That's part of our purpose and part of our business model. But we haven't ever really leveraged the network effect, I would argue. And I think we've got an opportunity in an increasingly digital company to do that more effectively. So that's one example of something that recently I've learned. But there's no doubt after 12 months this year, I'm a different person because of all the experiences and exposure I've had to different subjects. And if I'm blessed enough to do this another year, I know it'll be the same 12 months from now.
Yeah. And speaking of that, do you have any goals either business-wise or personally for 2019?
Yeah, we're just kind of working on those as we speak and going through our annual review process and thinking about what we want to accomplish next year. And I think about the long term as we set those short term goals. And what I'm hoping to have done during the tenure that I'm here and the leadership team that I'm working with is to have strengthened our culture, to have shaped it in a way that we just talked about a few minutes ago so that it continually adapts and learns a stronger, more effective culture, because I know that the pace of change and the magnitude of change is only going to be more significant when I retire than it is now or when I started. So that's one area of focus. And then the other one is positioning. So we've been working on what businesses the company is in and what geographies we're in as we build our ecosystems by market around the world. So we've made some difficult choices to exit some markets so that we have resource to make bigger bets in other places. So in the last 12 months, we've sold off 80% of our business in Brazil, but we've invested to buy 77% of Flipkart in India. So there's a piece of work underway related to the portfolio that will continue on as I think about our goals for next year.
And when you're setting ambitious goals like that and you're entering new territories, whether it be the investment in Flipkart or something like that, there's bound to be some hiccups. And business people, especially the infamous Jeff Bezos, love talking about failing and failing fast. How does Walmart kind of think about this idea of failure and if it's necessary and how you kind of nurture that, if that's a quality, like you're talking about it on the synthesizer board, you want to kind of dial that up?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And failure is required, and we do want to dial it up. And it's in our DNA. And Walmart's had a lot of failures. We tried an arts and crafts store years ago. We tried a farm implement store. We did a big hypermarket building that was buildings that were modeled after the big hypermarkets in Europe. We did a standalone drugstore and many other things. Those things that I just cited were from our earlier days. They were in the 80s and 90s. And we then hit on this supercenter concept, and it was so successful. We focused on that and in some ways missed other innovation that we should have been embracing, including the internet and e-commerce. So we ended up being behind because we were so focused on the bird in hand. So we've been focused in recent times on dialing up our risk tolerance. And I think one of the keys is to celebrate intelligent failures. And when things don't work, learn from those, celebrate learning more than we celebrate the failure itself, celebrate what we learned from it, reward those people and move on to the next thing. And don't let it become too much of a negative. So there have been cases where, you know, in the past we've let the failure hurt someone's career, and we're certainly trying very hard not to do that today.
But just to kind of close up this conversation, I wanted to ask something a little bit outside of business. So I actually know your son, and he's an incredible guy. So how do you kind of balance parenting, marriage, and being the CEO of the Fortune 1 company in the world? How do you make sure that all three of those buckets are filled, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't want to end my life having regrets. And I think that's probably where everybody, you know, is coming from as it relates to that question. I don't really like the term work-life balance because it's really just one life. So I think of it more as life balance. And you have to make some choices. Like if you saw me play golf, it would be like the worst thing you've ever seen. And I would like to play golf, but I don't, because that's one example of something I'm not doing with my time so that I can focus on the things that are most important to me. And my family talks about faith first, and then our family, and then our noble work, hopefully. Purpose-driven work. And so I've tried to be there, you know, when the boys had a practice, not just a game, or be there when there's an important event in their life and be around. And with today's technology, you can work in 15-minute increments. Like, it's not like it was when I started, where you came into the office and you worked the whole time and then you went home and you didn't work as much. I'm now kind of, my pie chart is divided up in smaller increments where, you know, I may be at home, and if somebody wants to have a conversation with me, I'm all in. But if they've gone off to do something else, I'm back on Walmart time thinking about the next problem or responding to email or whatever. So I really think it's just about choices, knowing and being thoughtful, deliberate, purposeful about what's important to you, what you value. You know, imagine the end of your life or the end of your career, what you want to have accomplished, and then allocate your time towards those things that are most important. And I'm not perfect. I get distracted and am not always deliberate or self-aware, but I think it starts with that, with self-awareness and then building a plan.
I like that, how we were talking about at the beginning with the cup. If you're constantly going back and forth if there's kind of not this work-life balance, there's just a life. You're going back and forth. You have to pour out that cup a lot, don't you?
You do. You got to move on to the next thing.
Well, thank you so much, Doug. We really appreciate your time, and I just wish you the best and wish Walmart the best. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm aware of your pursuit, and I wish you the very best, too. Good luck to you.
Thanks again for listening. You can find more information at www.investingcity.org, where you can sign up and subscribe for our email newsletter that goes out every Tuesday and Friday. And you can also follow us on basically every social media platform on the face of the earth.
And if you're feeling extra generous, please leave us an iTunes review, as it really helps us out. And with that, have a fantastic day.